Media. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Here's to a wonderful 2014. And I'm in a very chilly spot on the universe, in the universe right now, 10 degrees here in New York City. It's fun when it's cold, whether you're in or out. And I wanted to mention a few things before we get into the main part of the program. Robert Goodland, does that name ring a bell? He died on December 28th, and I wanted to mention him because I've had him on this program, and he was a wonderful environmentalist, researcher, writer. Perhaps you remember when the Food and Agriculture Organization put out this groundbreaking report in 2006, and they said that 18% of human-induced global greenhouse gases were caused by animal agriculture, and then World Watch Institute in their magazine put out an article by Jeff Anhang and Robert Goodland later on reevaluating that study, and they said 51% of human-induced greenhouse gases are caused by animal agriculture. And since that time, there's been a lot of back and forth about how that's right, how that's wrong, et cetera. I'm not going to go into it there, but Robert Goodland has written many wonderful works, and I just invite you to visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Go to the front page and click on Remembering Robert Goodland, the Conscience of the World Bank. You can listen to my interview with him. You can check the links and see some of his writings. Let's just keep his work alive. It's so important, and it's so good. All right. Now, back to the living. I want to invite my next guest on, Dr. Michael Greger. He's a physician, author, and internationally recognized speaker on a number of important public health issues. He has a 501c3 nonprofit, nutritionfacts.org, the first science-based non-commercial website to provide free daily videos and articles on the latest discoveries in nutrition. There's so much more about Dr. Michael Greger. He's also the director of public health and animal agriculture at the Humane Society, and so much more. Dr. Greger, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you so much for having me on, Karen. It's great to be back.
I miss you. I haven't seen you in so long.
Well, you know, I'm going to be in New York this weekend, actually.
That's actually why I mentioned it. I heard you were coming up here. There's a big event happening with a lot of cool people talking about food.
Indeed. And yes. I am but one of many.
And you are. But it's all good. So where is that? When is that? How can we know more about it?
Oh, you know, I should have suspected you'd ask something like that. So it's at the Hudson Theater, Millennium Broadway Hotel, 145 West 44th Street. And one can get more details at therealtruthabouthealth.com.
Right, or your website, drgreger.org, which can lead you to nutritionfacts.org, which can link to your events. People can find you all over the place, including New York, in just a few days.
If I don't freeze on my way.
Please don't. Well, it's probably cold in Washington, too, isn't it?
It's pretty chilly, but I'm all warm and toasty inside, looking at all the poor suckers outside in the cold.
Okay, so let's jump into some nutrition facts. My first question for you is, in your opinion, based on fact, is there an ideal human diet?
All one can really do in terms of making decisions in life is based on the best available balance of evidence at any one time. And that may change as we learn more and more, but I think currently the best available balance of scientific evidence suggests that the healthiest diet, the diet most associated with longevity and the lowest rates of chronic diseases that are laying waste to our society, like heart disease, obesity, hypertension, diabetes, is a diet focused around whole plant foods.
Very good. That's what I always say. Excellent. So what about all those paleo people out there?
Well, you know, so the paleo people make this argument that, you know, human beings have been around for 2 million years, and just the last 10,000, just a blink of the eye in terms of geologic history, we've been, you know, eating the way we have with the advent of agriculture about 10,000-12,000 years ago. But, you know, I think it's important, and that's an important perspective from an evolutionary biology perspective, but what they miss is that actually we as human beings have been evolving for the last 200 million years from the Miocene era, when primates first started. And so for 99% of our evolution from 200 million years ago to 2 million years ago, we were eating a diet centered around fruits and vegetables, centered around plants, dark green leafy vegetables, meaning leaves and fruits. And so for 99% of our evolution, our biology is attuned to eating plant foods all day, every day, all day long. And really, the blink in history is really just this last, 2 million, where we also incorporated some animal foods. But our biology, I think, is really tuned to that of our fellow primates, which is is shown by the kind of chronic diseases that affect people that eat kind of meat-heavy diets. I think one can make a better argument for a Miocenic diet than a Paleolithic diet, but regardless, they do have an important good point that, these processed foods, whether it be, Coca-Cola or sugary foods, really don't have a place in the human diet and, associated with all sorts of bad health outcomes. And so they're certainly right about getting rid of junk food. Even Dr. Atkins with the Atkins diet, right? He said, look, get rid of, don't drink milk and, don't eat Twinkies. Basically, anyone who says don't eat donuts is going to improve the health of Americans. That's not far enough.
Even vegan donuts.
And we really
donuts.
Need to move towards eating more whole plant foods.
Even
general.
Vegan donuts.
Vegans used to be really healthy people.
Yeah.
Right? Because what could they eat? Right? They stuck in the produce aisle. Right? But now, particularly those in Brooklyn, can gorge on amazing vegan junk food and can be just as unhealthy as everybody else, or almost just as unhealthy. Same thing with the gluten-free people.
Yeah.
The people with celiac disease, my patients with celiac a couple decades ago, they were forced to be healthy. They couldn't eat donuts. They couldn't eat cake. They couldn't, they couldn't eat all this junk the American diet is centered around. But now there's gluten-free junk food, and they can get gluten-free donuts. And so now they can be as sick as everybody else.
As everybody else. Amen to that. Okay. Now, moving on, I think it's kind of linked to processed food, but I want to talk about bugs. So bacteria has been getting lots of press as we learn more about having them around, and some of them are good and some of them are bad, and some are kind of bi, where they go good and they go bad. Can we talk a little bit about them? Are you probiotic, prebiotic, antibiotic?
More importantly than there are certain, I've recently had a number of videos about prebiotics and probiotics. In fact, today I had a blog about the effects of probiotics actually on mental health, which is this new field of endocrinology that has to do with the effect of our gut on our whole nervous system as well, enteric neuroscience. In general, probably prebiotics are more important. So probiotics play a role for people in terms of treating antibiotic-induced diarrhea. preventing and treating antibiotic induced diarrhea. And so for those people, I would put them on an acid reflux regimen, and we can talk about that. But for people that are not suffering GI symptoms, don't have diarrhea, don't have, chronic bloating, some of these other problems, well, then they don't need probiotics. They're bacteria fine. What they need is prebiotics. They need to eat things like fiber and resistant starch found in beans and found in whole grains that feed. They actually don't get broken down in our small intestine, end up in the large intestine, and feed our good bacteria so they can do what they were meant to do. And they produce all sorts of wonderful compounds like propionate and butyrate, which have anti-cancer compounds, actually circulate throughout our entire body and have all sorts of physiological effects. We have a symbiosis. We're kind of an organism made up of multiple different types of organisms, and we feed them, they feed us. But when we change our diet, we can dramatically affect the ecosystem down in our gut for good or for ill. In fact, this recent study got a lot of press. It was a letter published in the New England Journal that found that people that switch from a plant-based diet to eating animal foods get a kind of a boost in the populations of these bacteria that are associated with inflammation. And this goes along with that whole trimethylamine story, where carnitine, this compound in muscle foods, and choline, this compound in eggs in particular, but also in poultry, can be turned by bad bacteria in the guts of meat eaters into this something called trimethylamine oxide, which can cause inflammation and increase our risk of heart disease, all sorts of bad things. But if you take vegans and feed them a steak, which they actually had in this study, they took a long-time vegan, and they were willing, in the name of science, to eat a steak.
Wow.
They didn't create any of this toxic substance from the carnitine in that meal because they didn't have the bugs. They had not been fostering these bad bugs all this time, and so they didn't have the bad bugs in their system. Now, if they kept eating steak, then eventually they would slowly but surely, foster the growth of steak-eating bacteria. But when you foster the growth of fiber-eating bacteria, then you get these wonderful bacteria that can have all sorts of beneficial effects, not only for our physical health, but our mental health as well, we're now finding.
And prebiotics, when we get them from food, are cheaper than probiotics in little capsules.
Oh, sure. And actually, by eating plant foods, we're getting both. I mean, these lactic acid bacteria, these lactic acid-producing bacteria, that's what makes sauerkraut. How do you make sauerkraut? You basically put cabbage and salted water. And so, don't you have to put a culture in? Don't you have to put bacteria in? No, the bacteria is found naturally on the leaves of cabbage. And the only reason you add the salt is to prevent the growth of other bacteria, bad bacteria, so it doesn't spoil. And so there are these probiotics, these lactic acid-producing, these like acidophilus-type bacteria found on produce, found on fruits and vegetables. So by eating fruits and vegetables, we get the best of both worlds. We get the probiotics and the prebiotics. And you're right, it's cheaper and it's safer as well.
Now, I'm going to ask you what some of your favorite discoveries were in 2013, but I just want to mention that one that I found out about that got me very excited was resistant starch.
Oh, neat. Oh, you haven't seen nothing yet. I must have at least 5 or 6 videos coming up in 2014 on resistant starch. I just touched really on resistant starch.
But isn't it like the greatest thing since, I don't know,
it's really amazing. So basically, this is talking about the benefits of legumes, the benefits of beans, peas, lentils, soy foods. These are we really need to eat beans every day. In fact, in the latest edition of Becoming Vegan by Davis and Molina, they even suggest eating beans at every meal.
Mm-hmm.
Be like the Britons and eat beans for breakfast because they're just so incredibly healthy. One of the things that's found particularly in beans and less so in other foods is this wonderful resistant starch. I mean, they call it resistant because it resists digestion in our upper digestive tract and so makes it down and is able to feed our good bacteria and has all sorts of wonderful health-promoting effects. And it's really hard to get enough of it unless one is eating lots of beans.
And we don't even get the full caloric effect that we thought we were getting from them.
Oh, it has all sorts of neat. There's all sorts of neat. There's actually kind of starch digestion blocking enzymes, these amylase blockers within within beans that actually kind of protect the starch from digestion. And so, yeah, it has the kind of effect of some of these kind of starch blocker, over-the-counter drugs that are sold, but without the bad side effects. In fact, those, many of those supplements are actually made from white beans, they're kind of extracted from beans, but it's better to just eat the beans and get the benefits that way.
Okay, let's hear for the beans. Woo! What else was good in 2013?
You know, I'm glad you, I should, last year I did a kind of a year of review blog talking about the most popular and most interesting videos of the year. I should do that again.
Yes.
I'm going to make a note for myself. 2013 videos. Oh my God, there was such wonderful stuff. Such cool stuff. Remember that esophageal cancer and strawberry one? That was just insane. I mean, Dr. Dean Ornish and colleagues, the first to really publish about reversing heart disease, opening of arteries without drugs, without surgery, just a healthy plant-based diet and other lifestyle changes. You know, and that really was a revolution in the field. We could reverse, not just stop, but reverse our number one killer. So after, checking off, number one killer off the list, Ornish went on to try to reverse cancer. And successfully was able to treat men with prostate cancer with a vegan diet for a year. Actually saw a reversal in the cancer biomarker PSA levels.
Yep.
So that's really kind of the hot field right now is reversal of cancer and precancerous lesions. And so what this group did, they looked at esophageal cancer, one of our deadliest cancers. Unfortunately, it's found very late, and typically people just have a few months to live when they find out they have it. And so that's why this is the cancer you want to prevent in the first place. But basically what they did is they gave people equivalent of a pound or two of strawberries every day for a couple weeks. So these were people with proven precancerous lesions, these dysplastic lesions in their esophagus that turn into cancer, and they were able to show that you could actually reverse the progression. So they were hoping, we could stop the progression so it didn't turn into cancer. But instead they went, and in half the patients, the lesions completely disappeared.
With strawberries.
With strawberries. Complete cases of complete clinical regression with, what was this magic miracle, drug? Well, it wasn't a drug at all. It was strawberries.
Strawberries.
And the reason that this isn't headline news everywhere is because there's no profit. No one makes money off of strawberries. If that was some drug, it'd be making some drug company billions of dollars, right? And we'd hear about it everywhere. There'd be ads on TV. But when that quote-unquote drug is just strawberries, which can't really be patented or branded, no one's going to – even a strawberry company wouldn't pay for promotion because odds are when you went to buy strawberries, you wouldn't buy their strawberries. You'd benefit some other strawberry producer. So it doesn't make financial sense to promote produce. That's why we never see an ad on TV for broccoli. So we don't hear about this stuff. And that's why I created NutritionFacts.org, because there's this tremendous science out there, this amazing mountain of evidence that just no one ever heard of. It's not that the science isn't there. It's just that no one knows about the science because there's no profit motive to get it out to the public, get it on the evening news. So that was why I created the site a few years ago, and it's been growing ever since.
Yay, Dr. Greger. Now, another thing with that is that most of us mere mortals do not have access on the internet that like some amazing medical doctors do, to some of the journals that are putting out this information. You have to have subscriptions. to all of these things and access, right?
There was a tremendous professional monopoly around this information where, you know, doctors were the kind of, you know, complete mediators of this kind of medical information, and that there was just no hope for the lay public to make any kind of independent decisions about, you know, what the best available evidence was. Now things are better. There's a lot of so-called open access journals where you can actually read some of these scientific articles and studies that are coming out. Now, oftentimes they're written in kind of techno-speak.
Yeah.
And so it's jargon, so it makes it difficult for people, for the public to understand. But you're right. Still, there's kind of payment firewalls. Or paywalls, blocking access to many of the scientific publications out there. That's why you have to live biking distance from the National Library of Medicine here in Washington, D.C. The reason I live where I live is because I'm right next to the biggest medical library in the world, which essentially has access to everything. And so I, too, don't have access. I only have access because of where I live, but I'm able to bring that access to everybody and translate all that kind of medical speak and bring it out to the world, and I'm happy to do it.
Thank you. Now, I was reading in the New York Times this weekend about what we're dying of these days and how long we're living, and they were saying that we're dying less of heart disease and more often of cancer, and they're kind of catching up with each other.
In Canada, cancer is actually number one, and heart disease number two. I know this, you know, I give this talk on, you know, preventing, treating, reversing the top 15 killers, and everywhere I go, I have to give a slightly different version. When I went up to Canada, I was surprised that actually, you know, I start out the talk talking about cancer, and heart disease drops down to number two. There's no reason heart disease should be anywhere on the list because it's a disease that can be essentially completely prevented in the first place, so no one ever has to get it, and it never need progress if you do have it, and can get on a good diet. It can actually be reversed in the majority of cases. And so the fact that it's a leading killer at all or a killer at all shouldn't be there. And so as people learn more about good nutrition, hopefully it will fall off the radar and we'll be telling our great-grandkids about how there was this terrible scourge. People used to die of heart attacks. Our heart actually stopped beating. And then our great-grandkids go, no. And but yes.
Yeah, I look forward to that time. Okay, now I'm a big proponent of dark leafy green vegetables, and I get them every way I possibly can. And I think I've been quoting you for a long time, saying there's nothing that kale can't do. Did you say that?
Yeah. If I didn't, I should have.
I think you did say it, and I think I've been quoting you anyway, or stealing it from you. But is there any time when you can get too much kale? Or too many greens?
Yes. Oh, too many raw greens, yes. Cruciferous vegetables have these natural, what are called goitrogenic compounds, which can interfere in thyroid function with people with marginal iodine intake. So what these compounds do is they block the thyroid uptake of iodine. But the answer is to not avoid these super healthy foods, but just get enough iodine in our diet. And so that's why it's sea vegetables are wonderful foods. We should all develop tastes. There's similar goitrogenic compounds in flax seeds and soy foods. And so, but again, we don't avoid those foods. We just make sure we get enough iodine.
And how do we do that?
These compounds are also destroyed by cooking. So if you, it's not something you have to worry about if you cook it. There was a case in New England Journal of Medicine. Actually, the title, the case report, was called Coma Induced by Raw Bok Choy. This woman ate about 3 pounds a day every day. So it's like about 15 cups a day for months. And she wasn't getting enough iodine. And so she actually ran into real serious problems, ended up in the ICU. But she had consumed about 1,000 cups of raw bok choy. I mean, so that's, you know,
I love bok choy, but that's a lot of bok choy.
So you really shouldn't eat more than about 25 cups of coleslaw a day in terms of how much is in cabbage. But in trying to think kind of raw, cauliflower, it doesn't have a lot. So 50 cups, you shouldn't exceed 50 cups of cauliflower every day. Probably the highest is mustard greens. So about 3 cups of raw mustard greens is probably about the daily max on a regular basis. And, it's possible maybe people juice mustard greens. That sounds like a nasty juice. But, you could probably get more than 3 cups in, and so that's something you wouldn't want to do every day. But we should not kid ourselves that foods that have pharmacological effects, real effects on our physiology, like eating kale actually improves our immune function. We should not kid ourselves that something that powerful couldn't have a potential downside if one overdid it. You can drink too much water, wash out the electrolytes in your body and run into problems. These are powerful foods, and we should include them in our diet, but, let's not go totally crazy.
Okay, let's not go totally crazy. But is there a blood test or something to check how much iodine we have?
No, you can check thyroid function. So it's something called TSH, a thyroid stimulating hormone level, and you can make sure that it's not being pushed down or it's not getting elevated, which means that you have a hypoactive thyroid gland. But it's not something I would worry about or unless one was symptomatic. Symptoms of hypothyroidism is like kind of the traditional ones are dry skin, dry hair, weight gain, fatigue, unexplained weight gain, fatigue. These are kind of low thyroid symptoms. And if that's the case and you're, juicing huge amounts of kale every day, you're like, and not eating sea vegetables, or if you are using salt, which I don't encourage people to do, but if you do use salt, use iodized salt, because it's just an easy way to get your iodine in. Otherwise, it's not something I would worry about.
Well, I think it's not really a good idea to worry about anything.
I would worry about not eating dark green leafies. I would worry so much that you actually do eat dark green leafy vegetables every day.
Okay, Dr. Greger, what are you eating these days?
Oh, yummy. I'm eating my, let's see. So this morning, I had, this really, I take a pomegranate, which is nice. It's pomegranate season in some parts of the world now. You take a pomegranate and you cut it hemispherically, and you open it up and then you whack it with a wooden spoon, get out all your aggression. And spit out the seeds into a little bowl. Then I added some unsweetened kind of Greek-style almond yogurt with some unsweetened cocoa powder to make kind of a chocolate pudding with the pomegranates. Added some pumpkin seeds. So I had this, like, chocolate pudding pumpkin, and the little seeds are like little explosions of juice. It was absolutely delicious. One of my favorite breakfasts during pomegranate season. This afternoon, I just had leftovers from last night, which was a big the huge amount of vegetables in a kind of marinara sauce on whole wheat pasta.
Excellent. Very good. Okay, well, I'm going to let you go. And thank you very much for everything that you do and for who you are. And check out nutritionfacts.org, right? And that's where it's all happening.
Keep up the wonderful work yourself.
Thank you. Be well. Hope to see you sometime soon. Stay warm. And thank you. Now I think we'll take a break. Okay. And while we're taking that break, you might go over to Responsible Eating and Living and check out that post, Remembering Robert Goodland. And then we're going to be back with the Center for Food Safety's Elizabeth Kucinich.